this time around. It's been on our list for a while, and I think there was a couple times he threw it out, and then we ended up doing something else.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously, I'm a huge fan of the slasher, you know.
You're a huge fan of this movie.
And this movie in particular, yeah. I just can't believe we haven't done it, but I'm glad that we're doing it now.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about the 1982 slasher, The House on Sorority Row, also known as House of Evil.
Yep.
And we are not going to touch on the 2009 remake because I've never seen it, nor do I want to.
That was like around that time when those fucking remakes, like Black Christmas was around that time, mm-hmm. Black Xmas.
Mother's Day.
Yeah, like I just avoided all of them.
Yeah, they were all bad.
And from what I gather, it was a good choice.
Yeah.
Like I haven't heard really a positive thing about anything. Every once in a while I'll hear people talk like positively about the Black Christmas remake.
Okay.
But that's about the only one.
I'm always afraid that I'm going to like, I just know I won't like it because the original in most of these movies are just too good.
Yeah.
Namely this one. So, this movie, this movie came out in the wheelhouse of when the first wave, like the golden era.
Yeah, like when people look back on the slasher boom, like this era is every movie that is praised, basically.
Yeah, before, I want to say it was between, obviously, 78, but mostly like 80 to like 84 was when all the good ones came out.
Yeah.
And then they kind of started getting watered down, but there were still good ones coming out after that, but I usually look at 84 as like the cutoff for like the really good ones, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like pretty much by 84, everything was done. And it was just, it really was already ran its course unless you were like Nightmare on Elm Street or like in Friday the 13th. Like every other slasher coming out was just rehashing the same old shit.
Yeah.
And they weren't getting the budgets to fucking do anything unless you were already an established franchise.
True story. Yeah. Cause these like I just randomly kind of like happened across this real quick that this movie, like the budget was $425,000.
Dude, initially it was, I think like 125.
Really?
I think it was like 125,000 initially. And then they went over and I think it was, who the fuck was it? Was it the cousin of the director? Ended up like fronting him like another 300.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it grossed $10.5 million. I mean, the return on this.
For a first time director.
Yeah.
So the director, Mark Rossman, he was basically like a protege of Brian De Palma, worked as like a first assistant director on home movies.
Yes.
Brian De Palma film. And then with the goal of becoming a director. And he basically said like, well, what better way of becoming a director than make a fucking movie? And this was the movie. So his first fucking movie actually comes out to be successful. Still looked at. It's been on like multiple lists that's put it up in the top 20 of like best slasher films of the 80s.
Like respected.
Not just like some dude sitting at home.
No, list. Like respected, like review, like, you know, sources.
Yeah. So, I mean, kudos.
Because I think this movie has a lot more to offer than most slasher movies. I mean, it's well done. They don't focus so much on the gore and the splatter and like how cool the kills are. There's a good story here.
So look at this movie and look at what he did and what he was trying to do. And then have this movie not be made until he made like four other movies. I think it would have been that much better.
Oh, for sure.
Like he would have been able to convey that style and do the stuff he was trying to do. But he does it in the movie, and I think he does it up fairly well, but it kind of falls short in some regards.
Yeah, for sure.
But nothing major. But if he would have been like already established as director, already had his shit down, and then came out with this story, I think it would have been fucking, he nailed it even harder.
Yeah. So the house on Sorority Row, I wanted to touch on like one of the coolest things about this movie before we get into it was the cinematographer of this movie. This was like his second, I want to say like his second movie that he did.
I think they met on the set of Home Movies.
Okay. That makes sense.
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. Timothy Sirsted. Now he did this one. Check out this list of movies he did cinematography for.
Lay it on me.
Suburbia.
All right.
Teen Wolf. Critters. Mannequin. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Men at Work. Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. The Wedding Singer. Office Space. Major League 3.
Fuck.
And I stopped there. There's more going forward that were big movies that I don't really have any interest in, but like they're known movies. He kind of went on to have a pretty successful career just in cinematography for some pretty big movies. So this was kind of his first like big movie that he did.
Yeah.
But yeah, dude, that's a pretty impressive list, you know, for a cinematographer that's up and starting. He went on to have a pretty good career. So
dude, that's like, what was it? The guy who did the music for Combat Shock. That was like his first gig, I think. And he just, you go through his list of stuff he worked on. It's like every Hollywood blockbuster.
He fucking soared with the Eagles.
Jesus Christ, man. Like he went from Combat Shock, like, I've never done this. Let's give it a shot. To like, yeah. You're like owning the world.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, man. He got his foot in the door. I mean, if you're good, you're good, right? Yeah.
Fucking right.
This movie stars, namely, Kate McNeil.
Yeah.
And she also was the main star in Monkey Shines.
Mm-hmm. And I think she did so she did Monkey Shine, was that like 6 years after this?
Yes.
And then a year before this, she did, was it Bachelor Party?
Oh, with Tom Hanks?
Was it Bachelor Party or was it Beach? I think it was Bachelor Party.
Oh, I don't know. Was she in Bachelor Party is like the unsung hero of 80s like party films, man.
Oh yeah, dude.
It's so good.
I might be wrong on that. It might not have been Bachelor Party, but that's what's coming to my mind. But like everybody just says like Monkey Shine, but I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure she was in that too. That's fucking cool.
That'd be cool if she was in that, because she was also in another movie after Monkey Shines. And it's what I consider to be the last bastion of good Van Damme films.
Oh yeah, she was in fucking the hockey one.
Sudden Death. Fuck, baby.
Sudden Death, yeah.
Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Van Damme kicking ass in a penguin mascot uniform. You want it.
It was Beach House.
Oh, Beach House?
Fucking Beach House.
Okay. I would have been stoked if it was Bachelor Party.
Would have been a lot cooler if it was, man.
Yeah. Also, Harley Jane Kozak, who went on to star in Arachnophobia.
Yep.
And those were the only two kind of that went on to do anything.
Yeah, there was like a big chunk of it. I think like four or five of the people, this was the only movie they ever did.
But they went on to do soap operas, successful ones. Like two of the women in this went on to like, they were in multiple, like Young and the Restless, As the World Turns.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember the Young and the Restless one, yeah.
Yeah, so like they were in multiple, but that was kind of all they ever really did.
Dude, but honestly, I don't know shit about soap operas, but I think if you could land that gig, those characters go on for like 50 fucking years.
For sure.
And I think like aliens are involved now, like yeah. Some weird shit. Like if you can just land one of those, you probably, that's a sweet gig.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think it's more respectable to know that you were on The Young and the Restless and never ended up on Touched by an Angel. Because that's where everybody ends up, right? Like he was in a slasher movie from the 80s. Throw him on Touched by an Angel. Like, is that fucking homeboy from Sleepaway Camp 2, who is that, TC?
TC, dude, Touched by an Angel.
I remember me and you went through like a fucking laundry list of like just actors that...
How many degrees of separation is there by Touched by an Angel?
They were all in it, dude. Like the guy from Hide, Go, Shriek. There he is, you know?
I don't know shit about that show, but I'm going to guess it's probably like almost like a Grey's Anatomy where they're always needing people in episode to episode because they need new like patients or new whatever, that it's probably one of those situations where it's a show that just like throws a wide net because they need people.
Yeah.
So it's probably easy to land a gig.
Yeah.
Which is why you could probably find somebody who's on Touched by an Angel or Grey's Anatomy.
True story. I forgot. Yeah, there was a lot of, you know, we're gonna get into this. Do you know Grey's Anatomy came out 20 fucking years ago, dude.
It was like 04.
I was listening to Dave and Chuck the Freak in the Morning the other day. Grey's Anatomy's first episode was like 2004, I believe.
God damn. Is it still going?
Yes.
Fuck.
Believe so. I could be wrong. I don't know. But yeah. What the fuck, dude? So with that being said, so this movie is, it's got like a classic backstory that eventually turns into like a kind of like a revenge, like your normal slasher movies have.
Yeah, and this one kind of pulls from a lot,
mm-hmm.
to a degree, but I don't think it's blatant.
No, they don't make it too obvious. Yeah,
I mean it's there, but it's not like done exactly like the other ones. But it's, you can tell where they pulled stuff from.
Yeah, and it's not you don't get the ripoff vibe from this one.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you watch certain slashes, you're like, they're just straight ripping off shot by shot from whatever. You know, I mean, the obvious ones like Halloween and stuff, Black Christmas. But this one has more of a tasteful approach in the tropes that slashers have.
Well, with this one, he wanted it to kind of have like a Hitchcockian feel. He was influenced by like early Bava films, Diabolik.
Mm-hmm.
So he was basically wanting it to have that aesthetic, but be a slasher film.
Yeah. Which was cool because not too many people were like reaching that far back into, they were just going for the immediate, like Halloween was successful. Friday the 13th.
Yeah. Looking for a fucking payday.
Yeah.
Just let's mimic this while it's hot.
This one has a little bit more of an artsy approach to it. Like a more of a tasteful to me, you know,
yeah. Which honestly it doesn't have the gore like was popular at the time.
Right.
It doesn't have the nudity that was really popular at the time. Nope. Like it's lacking both of those things. And for it, with it lacking those two things and it's still landing on people's top lists, it kind of speaks to the movie.
Very much so. And I think that might be in some cases why it does. Because they didn't rely heavy on gore and nudity to like sell it.
Yeah.
I mean, for a movie to have that type of return, to have not one pair of breasts exposed, I think. There is no nudity in this, I don't think.
There's one. The couple in the bed, in the waterbed.
Okay, in the beginning.
Before they get in the waterbed.
Okay. But very light on that. And like the gore, I mean, aside from like one scene.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just really.
I mean, honestly, all the gore was afterthought. They shot all that shit after production. And like, I think it was in the director's parents' house.
Oh, really?
Like, they that's where they shot, like, all the gore scenes.
Oh, wow.
After the fact.
Yeah, because I mean, you get the, there's blood and stuff, and there's, like, kills, but.
There's, like, motley kills. There's, like, limited blood.
Yeah.
A lot of the kills are off scene, camera. There's one kill scene that has no blood, which doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, how do you slice someone's throat, and there's nothing?
Yeah. Like, I mean, just roll with it, yeah. But basically, the movie is based around seven sorority sisters that are kind of graduating college.
Yeah, it's like their last like big coming to the end.
And they live in a sorority house with a house mother who's very unpleasant. And in the beginning of the film, she has complications with a birth.
Yeah, it opens up the film. It's like 1966.
It's like a flashback.
And yeah. It's like in black and white.
And it's believed that she did not have a successful birth.
Or did she?
Correct. So these seven sorority sisters get together and decide to have a party. And she forbids it. Like, you know you're not supposed to. She's very cold and just mean. And they don't like her. So they're like, you know. And then one of them hooks up with her boyfriend on a waterbed. House mother comes in with this like cane, kind of
gnarly cane with basically a pickaxe on it.
Yeah,
like, it's Jesus Christ,
like an eagle head or something on it, and like punctures the waterbed. And that chick gets super fucking mad about it, and like, I'm gonna get her back. And then rallies the sisters together, like, we got to play a prank on her. We got to get her back. And gets a gun from her boyfriend. Mildly, very quickly learns how to shoot it in a barn or something. And they convince each other that they're going to pull this off. And like, how would they do that? Well, what is the one thing that that the house mother is never without? Her cane. Put the cane by the pool or in the pool. Get her down there. Point a gun at her. Make her get in the pool. Basically humiliate her.
The pool that has not been cleaned or anything in a decade. There might be alligators in it. I don't even know.
Yeah. And
at
I don't
least
understand.
A frog or two.
Yeah. What the fuck? Because like in the beginning, when the mother comes to visit the one sorority sister, like the one chick.
Yeah.
She's like, what's up with the pool? And she's like, well, house mother doesn't want to have it maintained if we're not going to use it, but we don't use it because it's not maintained. Like, yeah, I'll clean it when you guys use it. Well, it's fucking dirty. Clean it and we'll use it. Like, I never understood that. It's like, you know, Inception, DiCaprio. Shit.
If the top's spinning.
Yeah.
Still in the dream.
So they basically try to play a prank on the house mother and it goes wrong. Like,
yeah,
they fucking kill
house mother dead.
The house mother
falls in pool, dies.
Yep. So then they decide that they're going to go on with the graduation party and figure out what they're going to do with the house mother.
So they sink her to the bottom.
Yes, they wrap her in towels and sink her to the bottom of the pool. And then they have the graduation party. But I don't think she's dead. The house mother. Somehow she lives, or she was not dead when they did that?
No, she was dead when they did that.
It was said later on that, like, I thought they were arguing and they were like, how are we supposed to know that she wasn't really dead?
She was pulled up and moved and they thought she was alive.
Yeah. Okay.
Those two dudes jumped into the pool at the party and then pulled her up to hide her. And then that's when they found her body in the attic. She's like, oh my God, she was still alive. She fucking crawled her way all the way up here.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah. I always get confused. Yeah, okay. So
but she was dead.
She was dead. Okay, so the party's going on. People getting drunk and whatnots. And there is a random faceless killer that's like knocking off these college kids.
Yes, pretty much at this point is when it kind of just kicks into
and the cane,
middle of the movie.
The said cane is the murder weapon. And a couple of, none of the kills are really like spectacular, but
kind of sets up the whole trope of like it's made to look like it's her killing, doing the killing. Mm-hmm. Is it her? Is it not her?
Yeah. You assume it is because.
And I'm sure back in like 82, people assumed it was.
Yeah.
That's one of those things, like watching these movies now, knowing the tropes of everything from back then, you can kind of like guess right away that it's not.
Yeah.
But it's trying to pinpoint who it is.
That was the thing too. Like same thing with like, I think the only movie that pulled that off was fucking Happy Birthday to Me.
That was good.
You really fucking did really not good, know who the fucking killer. You thought you knew, but you didn't. Like, it was very well written. But in this one, you're led to believe that it's her.
Yeah.
Especially the way it's, like, even, like, the way it's shot sometimes with the hair. There's, like, some kind of, like, a wig or something that's worn. But then it turns out that it's, like, a clown later on in the attic. And we get, like, a severed head in a toilet.
Yeah, that death, though. God, that death's annoying.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I don't know why that one annoys me so bad. So, girl gets attacked on the front porch.
Yep.
She runs inside to the room. And this other girl's like, oh, my God, like, wait here. And then that chick just leaves. Like, cool, just leave the girl who just got attacked. But then the girl who got attacked, like, gets attacked again. She goes running down a hallway. And decides she's going to puke. So she just makes her way to the bathroom, kind of nonchalantly, like very cavalier. Pukes very loudly into a toilet and then flushes a toilet. Like you're running from somebody and trying to hide from them. Like you're being very fucking loud.
Yeah. And like, then to flush the toilet. On
yeah, that's the whole thing. Like to flush the fucking toilet. Like I get, like if you got to puke, like
I you probably, can't help that.
I probably would just puke and then keep running.
Yeah.
but find a toilet. Cool.
I would puke and run at the same time.
Yeah, dude, like.
I'd wear this all down your shirt. Attacked by a fucking killer.
But yeah, and then, yeah, she obviously gets killed.
Yeah.
But God, just that whole sequence with her and that death. Oh my God, it's so annoying.
Yeah, it's pretty. That might be the only low light.
It's obnoxious.
Yeah, a little bit. But yeah, it's just your basic, like, there's a party going on and they're getting picked off one by one. And the main chick in the movie,
Catherine,
is starting to make her rounds and realize that there's something fucking off, you know? And the bitchy one,
mm-hmm.
She gets killed. She's the one that rallied the troops in the beginning. She gets hers in the van.
Yeah, she's the one who gets the throat slit, yeah?
Yeah, with the no blood.
Bloodless.
The bloodless throat cut.
It was with a hot knife.
Yeah.
Cauterized it instantly.
Cauterized them balls. Two balls on the floor. Cauterized. yeah, so basically we find out at some point that the house mother did not lose the child.
Yeah, because so they get the house mother's med alert bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
And she calls and talks. That's how she gets in touch with the doctor.
Yes. Catherine.
Yeah, Catherine calls it, gets in touch with the doctor. And that's when this doctor comes into the picture and you realize that the doctor and the house mother have a history.
Yes.
And the fucking doctor, like, jabs Catherine with a sedative.
Yep.
To use her as bait, because the kid that you think died in the beginning from like a bad birth,
mm-hmm.
was actually alive, but like kind of like Jason in Friday the 13th was almost like a mongoloid type situation.
Yeah.
Which was like keeping him in an attic.
Yeah. Which was you find out it was a result of like a fertility med that he gave her that caused complications. There wasn't very much known about it.
Yeah.
And that it caused complications, and he hid the fact that the baby was born, but there was.
Well, I mean, the mom.
Abnormally.
The mother knew about it. The mother knew about it. And like he would like tell him, like, I told her he was fucking like gonna be, he was abnormal.
Yeah.
He's like, and we kept him in the attic and he must have seen the whole thing. So like basically they're hinting to the fact that he was living in the attic of this house the whole fucking time, which is almost like a Black Friday vibe to a degree.
Yeah.
Cause homeboy was just snuck in and was in the attic forever.
Yeah.
But watched his mom get killed, which then kind of connects into the Friday 13th thing.
Yep.
So now it's him getting revenge and just killing off all these sorority sisters because they killed his mom.
Yes.
And then the doctor knows about him and is like, we need to fucking trap him. I'm using you as bait. So he fucking injects her with the fucking sedative and tries luring him in because we need to trap him to kill him. But then the chick who got set, Catherine, gets up and like leaves. And he's trying to find her, but he's being loud as shit. Like, just yelling out, like, we need to trap Eric. We need to trap him. That's the only way we can stop this. Like, homeboy's in the house somewhere, and you're just letting it all known.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, yeah, he ends up fucking Eric just fucking two hands the fucking cane into his chest.
Yeah, and he falls off the second floor.
Yeah, drops him off the fucking stairs, balcony, whatever.
He's dead. And the reason that Catherine got up and escaped was because her blind date, Paul, happened to walk in and got hit with a trank dart.
Yeah.
He like...
The doctor was waiting for Eric to walk in, the kid, the mongoloid-looking...
Eric.
Whatever, Eric. And a dude walked in and he just shot him.
Yeah, hit him with a trank dart in the arm. So he's dealing with him. Catherine gets up. She's like wobbling around because she's on a sedative and locates the gun from the beginning of the movie. And I still have not figured out if you guys can update me on this. Maybe I missed something, dude. There's blanks in the gun now.
See, that's the thing that always struck me weird with this, because when they have the house mother at the pool, she says something like, that gun better be fake or you're all in a bunch of trouble. And she turns and points and shoots the lamp.
Yeah.
So it's not blanks at that point.
Right.
And then the house mother gets out of the pool, hits her with the cane, and she falls back. And when she falls, she shoots the house mother, which causes her to fall back into the pool
mm-hmm.
and dies. So clearly not blanks.
Right.
Come to this scene in the movie, though. She's in the attic with Eric and unloads and doesn't hit him. So either she's a horrible shot and they just kind of played that off kind of bad, or it's now fucking blanks.
No, there was blanks in the gun. So, like, I don't understand. Like, I don't think they ever explained that.
I don't know if it's supposed to be. I still honestly don't know if it's supposed to be. Because she shot the lamp and she shot the house mother.
I mean, I looked it up. And the Wikipedia says that there's blanks in the gun. So that's in the plot.
Well, I mean, it's also Wikipedia.
Yeah, true story. But I mean, we can't figure it out. So I'm just going with, like, there's blanks in the fucking gun. I don't know how that happened. But anyway, yeah. Catherine makes it through the house, goes and locates the gun, gets the gun. And her plan is to kill Eric. Right? And, like, for me, aside from the head in the toilet, this is the best scene in the movie. She's in the attic. She gets the jack in the box, puts it at the top of the stairs, trying to lure Eric up the stairs to shoot him with the gun.
No, that scene actually is really good, yeah.
And as she, and it's just the tension.
And she's just standing in the corner, gun pointed at the opening of the attic, just waiting for Eric to come up.
And the jack in the box ends, like it stops. And then you just see a fucking clown.
Because the clown costume's sitting there.
Yes.
But it's like the way it's set, you think it is actually just a clown costume hanging on a hook.
Like a.
And it never moves. Like she's in frame with it the whole time. And then all of a sudden, like out of nowhere, it just kind of starts rising up.
Oh.
And it's done very well.
That is one. Scenes like that are just one in a million. And I couldn't imagine being in a theater in 82 and seeing that for the first time. It's equivalent to Michael sitting up in the first Halloween off in the back. That's fucking, like, terrifying, dude.
There are movies, like, I wish I could have seen them for the first time back then, before, like what I kind of mentioned earlier, like before knowing the type of tropes that were going to be used in these movies. Seeing, like, this one being seen for the first time back then, before all that shit was established, the payoff would have been huge.
Oh man, that when the clown lifts his fucking head and you see the eyes, those crazy eyes, it's like, dude. And then you're like, holy shit.
The fucking that's like no different than like when. Oh, I mean, it's a little different because whatever, but it's the same thing as when, like, at the end of Carrie, when her hand comes out.
Yeah,
no one's fucking expecting that shit. But you watch a movie now, like, you're expecting, okay, well, the movie's over, but there's this nice calming scene at the end. Something's going to fucking happen.
Yeah.
You're just expecting it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, that scene like that, you're not really expecting it, because they don't, they give you a slight glimpse where it would have been able for Eric to get to the attic before her, and that's when she gets the gun and goes to the bathroom.
Yes, and sees Jeannie's head
in the toilet. She hides in the bathroom and then sees the head in the toilet
mm-hmm.
and then leaves.
Which would have gave him ample time to get up there.
Get back up
there. And get into the clown
yeah.
costume. But, yeah, dude. And then that's when she shoots him, like, fucking 8 times or whatever. Point blank range. And it has no effect on him. So you're either like, this is really bad acting,
fucking
or
Harry from fucking Dumb and Dumber.
Yeah. You're a terrible shot, Harry. Yeah, just like, dude. And then they go at it, Eric and Catherine. She ends up getting the chain.
She pulls a fucking head off a doll, and there was a knife in it. He had a fucking, like, hidden knife doll.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
He had a doll dagger. Knife.
Yeah.
Yeah. She rips the head off a doll, and there's a goddamn dagger sticking out.
Yeah. Gets him with that. Gets the cane and fucks him up with it. He falls down the attic stairs. His eyes open.
That's the thing. The ending, though, on this is kind of like a, like a, like a, I don't want to say weak ending, but it's not like a Like, it just kind of happens.
Yeah, they didn't really land the plane.
Yeah, it just, I feel like they were like, eh. And there was two other alternate endings.
Was there? Yeah. I did not know that.
So one of them was Catherine was supposed to end up in the hospital, like the attack and all that happens, yada, 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 whatever. And then it ends with her being pushed in a wheelchair by an orderly. And then they pan up and the orderly is actually Eric.
Oh, shit. That would have been cool.
And then the other one, which actually I think this one was filmed and the studio told them no. It's just too downbeat, basically, was the police were going to show up and start grabbing the bodies. And there's a body in a clown suit floating in the pool. And they pull him out and they pull the mask off and it's Catherine.
Oh.
Which meant like Eric was still around.
And killed her.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And they just said that was too down.
Oh, that would have been the perfect.
I feel like
that would have been the perfect ending.
That ending would have been amazing.
Wow.
Like, I know a lot of people feel this way. I prefer movies, like horror movies, that have a very like depressing, like horrific ending. Like, it doesn't need to be positive.
Right.
Don't end it on a positive note.
Even better when they lead you to believe that there's a possibility of a good ending. And then they hit you with that fucking 10-ton hammer at the end.
Yeah.
Like that.
Kill everybody. Kill the like last survivor. Jason should have killed the kids in part 6. All that shit.
Yeah.
Like, just go grim. Just, it's a fucking horror movie, man.
Yeah.
That ending would have been amazing. It would have just added, I think, to this.
Yeah, that would have been a perfect ending. Her in the pool with the clown and him still out there. And then it's just an open-ended, like, well, he's still loose. Like, yeah. That would have been sweet. That would have been really cool. Even the orderly one would have been cool.
But like that one, though, he killed, like, everyone was killed.
Mm-hmm.
So basically there's zero survivors and just the cops don't know who the hell did it. Basically, it's like a goddamn phantom.
Yeah. Wow. I'm actually hella fucking stoked on that ending. But yeah.
So much better.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, House on Sorority Row, 1982. I think it's on the upper echelon of the slashers that came out at that time.
It's one of those where if you're only in the mindset to see like the gore and the fucking polish and like the nudity and like the tits, this isn't going to sit well with you. But once you get past that and you just want to go check out a fucking solid movie, come back and check this movie out.
Yeah. It's just, it's a good slasher film and it's shot very well and it's got a pretty cool story to it as well. And just the fucking killer, like Eric in the clown costume is like,
it's fucking solid.
Yeah. It's pretty memorable. The only other movie I can think around that time that kind of is on the same level with this that lacks in the gore and the nudity and all that is Happy Birthday to Me. But that one had a great ending. The ending was the whole fucking movie, actually.
See, that's fucking weird, though, because I've only watched this movie a handful of times, and it's because I never think to go back to it, because it didn't really resonate that much with me. It's not bad. It's not a bad movie. I just don't, whatever. I never had that issue with Happy Birthday to Me. I'll watch that movie all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. It doesn't really have any of that.
Nope. But the ending
is... And I feel... the ending... But I also feel like it just has a different... I don't want to say shot better, but it's like stylized differently.
Yeah.
It just has a different feel to it.
Yeah. And it's very like story-driven.
Yeah.
Not just like we're going to have a fresh kill every 15 minutes and... You know, and it's just, I don't know. Those two movies are kind of like, to me, have like a classier approach as far as like, we're going to focus more on story than we are on just splatter. And
well, whenever I'll always be on some posts and people will bring up like, what are some American movies that could be, or like North American movies that could be considered like giallos, potentially. There's an argument for it to be made. Happy Birthday to Me is like, comes up all the time in those posts.
Oh yeah,
like it's a Canadian movie that has 100% a giallo vibe to it.
Absolutely, and we have touched on that before since we And it's true to me. I mean, it's like very Italian influenced through the eyes of Canadian like filmmaking, and very story driven, and even just like the cast, like none of them were really had anything to do with horror, like the main chick, you know. Mm-hmm. So you get it. So that my point is, not to take away from House on Sorority Row, it's just that it was a different approach to, at the time, was very heavily focused on gore, splatter. What does it look like when a head gets decapitated with a rusty saw? Like, people wanted to see that, like, nudity, cool, who doesn't like that? But these were movies that were more story-driven, like Night School.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
that's another one that comes up in that argument.
Yeah, there's a small, like... barrel of movies that came out that were more story driven and had a little bit more to offer than just gore and nudity.
I feel like, so Black Christmas came out, and I feel like it kind of put a split in the road, like a fork in the road. And some people took that fork and it ended up being like just the gratuitous kills and then the gratuitous nudity that just kind of steamrolled into that. And other people took that other road, which was not so much the gore and the nudity, because I mean there's no new really nudity in Black Christmas,
no,
but going to the kills and gore, which then just rolled into kills, gore, nudity. The other path was the story and the way it was shot, the vibe of it, and just like, I feel like Black Christmas made a fork in the road where people took inspiration from Black Christmas but did kind of different things, or did something that led to something.
Well, the two main movies that were influenced by Black Christmas are the two forks in the road. There's Halloween and Friday the 13th.
Halloween, Friday the 13th,
yeah. I mean, dude, those are... And then there's movies that went one way, and then there's movies that went the other way.
Well, it even... I mean, 100% yes. I get, yes. But also, there's people who say they're influenced by Halloween, but they started just doing more Friday the 13th style stuff. It was just nudity and gore.
Yeah.
But, like, trying to have that, like, Halloween... esque vibe to it,
right? But yeah, that's a good point, because Black Christmas definitely, to me, that's the staple by which all movies should be judged.
So good.
So yeah, and this is no exception. So if you guys have not seen it, it is on Tubi, it is on Shudder, House on Sorority Row. It's definitely worth the watch if you haven't seen it. And if you have, watch it again. It's really good.
Oh, speaking of Tubi, for anybody that uses Tubi, FYI, pay attention to the run times on the movies. Because the guy who runs Terrorvision, that label, posted in a group that... Tubi has been asking, like, distributors of movies, who they get their movies from, to trim out, like, gore and nudity.
No way.
And shit, and, like, censor some stuff. And sometimes people do it. I guess one company's been doing it for a while, but it's, like, they'll trim stuff down to send it to Amazon and stuff as well. Full Moon. Full Moon's been doing it for years.
Oh, wow.
So the stuff on streaming for Full Moon is usually cut. But people have been mentioning that there's been a few things they watched, not even just horror stuff. Somebody said Kids in the Hall. They watched episodes of Kids in the Hall on Tubi, and it was cut.
Wow.
Like, they'll either trim stuff out, censor stuff.
What the hell?
So, yeah. Well, they sold to Fox 2 years ago, 3 years ago, something like that. And... it's a free service that is paid by advertisers. So, I mean, advertisers, if they want it to be more family friendly because they wanted to go to a wider range.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Oh, they also changed their logo as well.
Yeah, that logo's bad too. But yeah, it is. From what I've heard, like, it's been spotty with how many movies they've done it with. But just keep an eye on that runtime before you watch a movie on fucking Tubi.
Okay, noted. Yeah, did not know that, because everything I've ever watched as far as like...
I think I've ran across one where I'm like, I'm pretty sure they just fucking censored something. Like, it was blurred out. It was fucking weird. But I can't remember what the movie was. But for, like, 9 times out of 10, the shit that I've turned on there has not been edited.
Yeah, because from what I remember, like, the Mutilator, the Burning, like, the hook scene in Mutilator's in there, and the raft scene in Burning's in there. So I
started digging in a little bit more, and from what I've found, most things were, like, edited, but they were sent that way to Tubi.
Oh, yeah.
Because sometimes people, like, just send streamers, like, the TV cut or whatever.
Yeah, like, they had the Seven Doors of Death on there before the Beyond.
Yeah, before the actual Beyond.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was, you know.
But I guess, according to him, he's been reached out and contacted by Tubi and asked him to provide, like, if he would be willing to provide, like, a more cut-down, trimmed, less explicit version of movies.
Well, let's not do that.
But yeah, dude, let's not lose Tubi.
Yeah, no, because that's been the go-to. And I still fuck with Pluto as well. So, but yeah, okay. House on Sorority Row, 1982. Check it out.
Fuck yeah.
All right, I wanted to touch on... first of all, I just want to put out there that I haven't been watching any movies. I'm just still doing deep dives into Twilight Zone episodes, man, like the first 4 seasons. So I've been on that kick for a while now. It's known. I've mentioned it.
Dude, you're going to run through the entire series.
It's like 150 episodes, 150 plus, and I'm still coming across episodes I've never heard of, never seen, and that's the beauty of there being that many episodes. Also, learning about Rod Serling and him smoking 8 packs of cigarettes a day. And that he had like 3 fucking heart attacks.
I mean, that'll do it.
Yeah. Like, he literally went into the hospital because he was having a heart attack. They took care of it. He left the hospital and had to turn right back around because he was having another heart attack. It's just like fucking crazy. But the first couple seasons, he was like, I do not want to be seen on screen without a lit cigarette in my hand. And I won't bore you guys with the fucking cool facts I found out about the Twilight Zone, but I've been a little obsessed lately. And there was a couple episodes that were banned for, you know, one of them was banned for over 50 years. They wouldn't allow it to be shown on TV.
Really?
Yeah. It was the Vietnam vet and the other Vietnam vet. One was Vietnamese, one was American. They just happened to be drinking beer in an attic. They were neighbors. And they relived the nightmares that they both, and almost killed each other. It was called The Encounter. Excellent episode. Fucking tension at its best. And it still is pretty relevant today as far as like the racial tropes that were mentioned and said in the episode. Fucking awesome. But yeah, I've been doing that, and that's about it. I really haven't watched any movies, but I have been hyped up. They're releasing the first of 3 chapters in the new Strangers anthology. And I've seen that that's coming, so I'm going to definitely like check that out. And that's about all as far as film.
Oh, yeah, I forgot Strangers 3 was coming out.
Yeah, it's a they're going to break it into, I believe, 3 segments, like an anthology.
I never seen the second one.
I haven't either, actually.
First one I dug. I know you really liked the first one.
I do, as far as like more modern.
Cause, you know, I think it was done pretty well.
Yeah, I like it a lot, actually. It's kind of a hidden gem in like modern muckiness of subpar horror.
Yeah, especially around that time.
Yeah, especially around that time. I mean, I think there's better stuff coming out now, actually.
Yeah, within the past, I think, 10 years, I'll give it a 10-year window. There's been a lot of more quality, newer horror.
Yeah, I think there's a come around, like a turnaround.
But around that time when Strangers came out, there it's just, I don't know.
There's only like a couple films. I know I really like the Cry Wolf movie. I like the Strangers, a couple other ones, but few and far between, man. And Scream 4 hit me with a fucking tack hammer on the side of the head. I wasn't ready for that. Oh, by the way, not to cut, but just real quick. I've never seen the movie. I'm being honest. I'm not trying to be cool. I've never sat through all of Scream 2. But House on Sorority Row, the dorm that dripped blood, splattering. Yeah, they were all apparently mentioned in that movie.
That's a Scream trope, basically, at this point. I think Scream, the first one, mentions like Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, and they just all the way through. And then part four, because I mean, two and three, I think I've only seen once a piece. I don't even think I've seen three all the way through.
Yeah, I don't even.
Four, they talk about Peeping Tom.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they almost do that became a thing where they do like the whole horror test, horror like knowledge type thing, and they just name off some fucking movies. And I mean, honestly, hopefully it gets people to check out some fucking movies.
Right.
Because I know me, if I was younger and like watched a movie and they was watching a horror movie and then that horror movie started mentioning like all these other horror movies that were I've never heard of, and I would be like very inclined to check that shit out.
It's like
so I'm really hoping it opens doors to people and they maybe actually get in the new like shit that they would have not checked out.
Yeah.
Had it not been for that.
Yeah. You want that like kid to watch Scream 4 and be like, Peeping Tom. But can that kid sit through a black and white movie?
Yeah. Can that kid sit through a movie from the fucking 60s?
That's not Ultra 4K. I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole again. But you know what I mean?
But yeah. Dude, I know when I was a kid, I didn't, like, when if something was black and white, I was like, nah. Nope.
Really?
I didn't really get into having an appreciation for stuff that was that old until I was a little bit older.
Mm.
It took me a minute.
Well, I think by
accident. Like there was exceptions.
Yeah.
Like if it was something I knew that was like hailed as something like Psycho.
No, Monsters.
And I chuck out like Psycho and I knew I liked Psycho, but like there was like so many other things. If I knew it was black and white, I was like, eh. And I think it mainly came down to I wasn't in the mood for something like that at that time. But I just wrote them. I just would write it all off. And it wasn't until I got a little bit older to where I started to have more of appreciation. That's when I went back and like started watching all the older stuff.
Yeah. And I refuse to watch the black and white stuff that's colorized. I still have not sat
there. That's horrible.
Have you ever watched?
Like, who thought that was a good idea?
I seen 30 seconds of a colorized Three Stooges episode and almost broke my fucking teeth. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
I haven't watched the fucking colorized Night of the Living Dead because that's why.
Never.
That movie's perfect. Never. Like, why do you need to colorize it? Like, fuck off.
No.
If anything, like, I can't see that gaining fans of that movie.
No.
Like, colorizing it is not going to garner more fans for the movie?
No.
Maybe like out of like just weird curiosity, people might check out like a fucking color-eyed black and white movie. Let's see what this is all about. But fuck.
No. Can't do it.
Like that was another one. Night of the Living Dead, like as a kid, like as a younger kid, I guess. Didn't bother me as black and white. But somehow I had like this weird disconnect where any other thing suggested or that I saw was like a known whatever. I was just like, it's black and white.
Yeah.
Until I got into like my late teens is when I finally started dipping back into and was more open-minded to that shit.
When I was a kid, black and white. Okay, so it happened by accident for me. I had a black and white TV in my room. The TV, the color TV we had that I hooked my Nintendo up to, shit out. And the only other option was a very small, like, dial, rabbit ear, black and white TV that we were supposed to use temporarily, but me and my brother just ended up, like, having it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I did watch Night of the Living Dead on that TV. And
you didn't realize it was black and white.
I didn't know the movie was black and white because everything I watched on the TV was black and white, even my Nintendo games. But I remember in the mornings getting ready for school, I remember that their Channel 20 had the lineup of Green Acres, Addams Family. And then eventually it went into like My Three Sons or something, which eventually went into the entire Nick at Night lineup. Mr. Ed, I think, was in there too.
Oh, yeah, he was.
But I always loved watching the Addams Family in the morning. But everything was black and white, so I didn't realize that those shows were actually black and white. They didn't bother me. It was the colorized fucking Gunsmoke and John Wayne movies and Fuck Off. And, like, I hated that. Like, the Western shit, like, I hated that when I was a kid. Like, I could deal with black and white shit, but, like, Westerns,
I yeah, oh,
This is fucking worst.
I had a hatred for Westerns, and my dad would put them on. And it would be like the John Wayne ones. And it wasn't until he put on like the Clint Eastwood, some of his.
Well, those are sweet.
When I started, I was like, all right, well, these aren't so bad.
No, those are actually pretty cool.
It's like when I'm just sitting on like in the living room with him, like that's what he's watching, and like he's not changing the fucking channel. And you do not ask him to.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I guess I'm just hanging out here, so I got nothing else to do.
You do not fuck with that generation of men when John Wayne's on. I've learned that with my Uncle Roger, dude. If it's John Wayne Day, you find something to do because the TV's fucking taken for the day.
But yeah, like one time he had like on AMC or whatever, and it was like a fucking Clint Eastwood. I don't know which one it was, but I'm like, we're just sitting there, what else am I doing? And I was like, I don't actually mind this one. And that's kind of where I was like, okay, so if there's good movies in this genre, like better movies, I guess. If a fucking John Wayne just sucks.
Could be my age, but I'll take Tombstone and
Wyatt Earp.
Unforgiven. I'll take those two over any of those old. But I have watched like Fistful of Dollars, Two Meals for Sister Sarah, way better than McClintock and the Flying Seabees and all those fucking shitty John Wayne movies.
Is it McClintock the one where they're just fighting down a hill?
Probably.
Just like punching everybody.
Shit all sucks, man.
It's John Wayne, dude. That dude sucked in real life.
Yeah, he did. Good.
He's dead. I mean, Clint Eastwood in real life isn't like a lot better, but he's a little bit better.
Yeah, fuck John Wayne. I might get some heat for that.
Dude, sorry. No, honestly, fuck John Wayne.
Yeah, no good.
What is it? John Wayne was a Nazi? Is that it? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know where we were going with that. But no, you want that kid to find...
We go on tangents.
Yeah. You want the kid to, like, watch Scream because he likes Ghostface, but then he's like, whoa, what's this, like... What's this Peeping Tom movie? What's this, They mentioned a couple other good ones in Scream 4 as well.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Remember. There's like 4 or 5 where like, whoa. Like,
God. I remember the first time I watched it, I was like shocked by two things. A, I was shocked that I did not mind the movie. I'm like, I actually don't mind this fucking movie.
I think it's good.
And then B was I was shocked on that scene of the shit they listed. And I was like, wow. All right.
Yeah.
But also, that movie was shot like within like a 5-mile radius of here.
Yeah, true story.
Parts of it were in Dearborn. Big chunk of it was in Plymouth. that barn scene was about 3 miles west of me.
Yeah.
I've talked about like just being bored one day, just driving around to all the locations.
That'd be cool.
Just to do it.
Let's do it.
I've looked them all up.
I'm down.
Okay, dude,
I'm sure there's some good pizza places out somewhere in any of those locations.
Pack a road cooler.
Maybe some Chipotle. Maybe get some Chipotle or something. Yeah, pack a cooler.
Pack a road cooler. We'll just fucking... Might be kind of weird fucking cracking a beer like in the middle of downtown Plymouth, but you know, whatever.
Yeah. The only time I'm down there is for the ice sculptures.
Dude, okay. Back in the day, so I had an ex whose dad lived in Plymouth. So I would be out there like every weekend just hanging out. Dad was awesome. Cool fucking dude. And we go downtown Plymouth. And I never really minded it. I was just there, was it last summer? It's fucking weird. It's like all like older people. We went to a movie, me and Jordan. And literally everybody in the theater was like 60 plus. I heard a breathing machine.
Oh, fuck. Like,
and then we got out of the movie, which was not a late movie. It was like 8 or 9. It was dark and it was summer, so like we'll say 9, 9:30. The entire fucking city was shut down.
That's Plymouth. Downtown Plymouth, yeah.
I'm like, fucking... It was fucking weird.
Yeah. All the young people like uprooted and went to Northville. Now, all the old people, they're going to stay in their house that they bought...
And like we,
a Frosty was a down payment with the boomers back
then. We went to a bar beforehand, just grabbed some food and like some drinks. And walking there, it's like everybody's like out front seating. I'm not even on one hand could I count the number of button up shirts and like khaki shorts I'm like, geez, like it's been a minute since I've been to Plymouth, but is it always been this way?
No.
Like, holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really dabble around those parts very often, but yeah. It's just the way it is. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. But
it's one of those areas that could be cool. Mm-hmm. And you can picture it. Like, dude, Plymouth's going to be sweet. Like, it's got this old theater.
Yep.
They do screenings. Like, it could be awesome. And it's just not. It's like ran by old fucking, I don't even know.
Yeah. Well, that where that theater is at, that whole, they shut that down and do the winter festival with the ice sculptures. Yeah. Which is always cool. I always like checking that out because this dude with chainsaws, like, sculpting ice blocks, and it's just fucking cool. I don't know, you know, and it's free usually. I don't know, it was back in the day. I don't know.
No, it is. Yeah, just find a place to park and walk around.
Yeah, I remember being out there when I was a kid, and it was fucking ass cold. Fucking jeez, we get the free hot chocolate, dude. I had like 16 of them. Like, it was fucking just to keep myself warm. I'm like, but yeah,
just to carry them around and keep your hands.
I was double fisting hot cocoa, dude. Fuck off. But all right. Shoot me with some bands. What do you been jamming anything?
Fuck. I really haven't been listening to shit. I was in like Chicago all of last week.
True story.
I hadn't really been listening to fucking anything. Actually, a lot of Uriah Heep.
Awesome. Okay.
Demons and Wizards.
That's the one, man. Sweet Freedom and Demons and Wizards are the two. But Demons and Wizards is eons better than Sweet Freedom.
Dude, like, so I'm sure everybody has that one song of whoever that's like a mood elevator that just it you're in a good mood and you're fucking jacked up after listening to it. Easy Living.
It's a jam, dude.
That, fuck you, dude. My neighbors are like 65 plus, and I'm sure they're tired of me, like, windows open, just cranking my stereo, jamming Demons and Wizards. Fucking Easy Living comes on. It's even fucking louder.
Yeah. And the Wizards on there. It's the one.
That whole album's a banger.
Yeah, it's good. Well, that's, hey, man. Like, I will never sour on Uriah Heep. I love Uriah Heep. I did have the pleasure of seeing what's left of that band, namely the guitar player, I think is like the only original member, but they were still really good live.
Well, they're coming back, my friend.
With Saxon.
With fucking Saxon. They will not have folding chairs out this time.
Man, you want to talk about breathing machines.
Dude, I couldn't imagine. I didn't go to that show with you, and I couldn't imagine being there for that shit.
Yeah, they just put like folding chairs out like on the main floor of the Token Lounge. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I just stood in the back like, okay. Everyone there was like thrice my age, you know, like, but it was still awesome, dude. It was cool. Well, I honestly have not been really per se listening to anything in particular, except for a band called Eternal Rot, mm-hmm. which is along the lines of like a Tenebro, just a death doom kind of, you know, gore soaked fucking just gross awesome. They just did a split with a band called Anatomia, and I've been jamming the fuck out of it. It's only two tracks from Eternal Rot, dude. It rules. It's so good. But yeah, definitely check that out. But I'm mostly just gonna read off albums that dropped today.
Have you ever checked out Internal Rot?
I don't think so.
You should probably check out Internal.
I will, maybe after this episode we'll do that, because I'm intrigued. I know Internal Bleeding are like a thing. They've been around forever.
I don't know that band.
I mean, if you like Devourment, maybe, or okay, Mortician, okay. Eternal Bleeding's been around for fucking ever.
Internal Rot is just a fucking ridiculous grind band from Australia.
Okay. Let's run it after the episode. And
we're going to have to stream it because I blew my fucking speaker.
Yeah, but you got one on the way. So we can't.
Got one on the way.
Ladies and germs, guys and ghouls, Jared blew a speaker. We have not been able to spin actual wax. We're going to be doing streaming music, which is cool. Nothing bad, nothing wrong with that.
That's twice thus far, Shooter.
Yeah. Yeah, there must be something in the water. I got to go play some golf. Okay, so check it out. These are, write this down, whoever's listening to this episode.
I didn't realize all this shit came out today. All
right.
This is mind-blowing to me.
Not all of this came out today, but most of it did. Early Moods, which I've been a huge advocate for that band. If you like Witchfinder General, if you like old traditional doom metal, Early Moods is awesome. Their new album, A Sinner's Past, dropped today. The new Midnight came out today. It's called Hellish Expectations. I've heard three tracks on it. They're all good. It's Midnight. Skeletal Remains, if you like death metal. An exceptional release, Fragments of the Ageless. The new Judas Priest came out today, and I've only heard one track on it. I'm going to kind of dive into it and see what I can get into with that. It's called Invisible Shield. Coffins from Japan released another single from their upcoming album that's called Sinister Oath. Huge fan of that band. Make sure you're sitting down for the fucking one person that might actually know about this. Fucking Toad Licker released a new record.
What?
I was beside myself when I hopped on my phone and seen there was a new release from Toad Licker, and that is L-I-Q-U-O-R, a Pentacle Sludge band from the 90s, 2000s, and it sounds exact like they just stepped out of a fucking time machine. It sounds just like old Toad Licker. It's heavy.
Fucking hell.
Good sludge. Local Boys, Scumrod.
Yeah.
New release. I Pray for Blindness, for I Have Seen Enough. Check that out. Punkers from Detroit area.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen them multiple times. They rule.
Oh, yeah.
That came out today. Spectral Voice. I don't even know what to categorize that band. I guess they're death metal, but they got way more to offer than just death metal. Very cool. It's not a full length. It didn't come out today, but they did release another track from that. Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, that album did drop today. It's called Sparagmos. And last but not least, recently, this was a couple of weeks ago, Tough Guy.
Tough Guy got a new release?
Yeah. Heinous Acts of Random Violence.
Hate the name. Really like the band, actually.
Yeah. It's very cool PV grind band.
Straight fucking like Mince band, dude.
Or Mince, yeah. More Mince. But yeah, they got some new stuff out. And Deterioration is dropping tracks left and right because they got some new stuff coming out. So
that's just what they do.
Yep. So there you go. That's all I got for you. We got some homework to do with plenty of new music to check out, man.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So
I mean, there's always music to check out.
Yeah, I just didn't know that today was the day that everything came out.
Fuck. Yeah, I mean, when you told me that, you're like, you know how many things came out today? I'm like, no. You like listed me off a few, and I'm like, how did I not see any of that?
Yeah, yeah. I definitely want to jam the new Midnight and Early Moods, but yeah. So that's all I got for you, music-wise.
Man, like, are you sure you're down to miss Early Moods to go to Wasteland?
Yeah, that's the debacle right now because Early Moods is playing with Conan in Ohio.
That's like three nights before, right?
Yeah.
So that would be...
But it's like a Wednesday or Thursday night.
Be going to like down to Ohio Wednesday to see Early Moods and potentially hang out with Hepatitis Steve.
Hep Steve.
Yeah.
And he ain't going to go to a Doom show.
No, dude. I was talking to Kirby and Kirby was like, oh, dude, if your guys go down to fucking... I can't remember the name of the where it's at. It's like something bowl.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a place that's down in Yorktown, Youngstown.
Youngstown, Ohio, yeah.
And he's like, if you tell him you're coming, he'll probably make it. He's like, he works early. He's like, but he'll probably show up to, like, at least a little bit to say what's up to you guys.
Well, that'd be sweet. Hep Steve is a delight.
Dude, he's great.
He is just a breath of fresh air with upper management written all over him. But, yeah.
And then we'd have to come back here and then, like, 2 days later go back to Ohio.
Yeah. Wasteland, dude. But yeah, Jared and I are going to Cinema Wasteland this year. I'm hella stoked. I don't even know who's going to be there, but it doesn't matter.
I haven't looked into the lineup too much, but I used to never for Wasteland, I never looked into the lineup because I knew like it was just always going to be a good time regardless.
Yeah, last year we went. It was Sleepaway Camp Reunion. That was awesome.
That was fun. Yeah, that was a good time.
Yeah.
Going to try to get Dave to go. Got to reach out to Mike, see if he's going to go, or Tim. Tim and Dave. Tim and Dave might be iffy. I feel like the last few years they've been kind of iffy on going.
Yeah.
But
still, it's Wasteland. I'll be there.
Dude, we got to go say our goodbyes to the Super 8 before it's torn down and becomes a sheets.
Yeah. So many good memories in that hotel, dude. Many hot dog parties.
There was, like, so much going on at Super 8. Like, there would be, like, rooms that were just straight up, like, people who didn't get a vendor table, and they would just be, like, a VHS selling room.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, avoid the fucking herd. Come over here if there's something you're looking for. I'll put it aside for you. We can just...
I remember we were
doing commerce in the room.
We were walking over to the convention, and there was we walked past guys coming into the Super 8 with a bunch of tapes, and I'm like, "Dude, are those tapes?" He's like, "Yeah, dude. What are you looking for?" I just like flipped through, and I think that's where I got my Thorny and my Return of the Living Dead.
Ooh, Clam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
got it for like $20.
Killer.
Who knows what the fuck it goes for now? It just seems to be skyrocketing.
Yeah, I got the slip, but that's a good pickup.
Then people were selling straight. People were. I remember one year people were selling boots of Hasu, the Japanese movie.
Okay.
And the boots, awesome. And I know they were selling them. I can't remember how. I think they were selling them for like $10 a piece or $5 a piece out of like the trunk of his car. I can't remember who it was, but they bought like a fucking grip of them, and then brought them to their table. Because they had a table in the convention and marked them up to like
dick move, man.
Between $10 or $20 a tape. I think they marked them up to 10. I don't think they went 20. But I'm like, God damn, man.
This is Wasteland. It's not Nam. There are rules, man. Am I the only one that gives a shit about the rules?
Dude, I will say, like, the whole like back in the day, Wasteland, the vendor room was fucking like you could find some shit.
Oh yeah.
And last year we went, it just had a different vibe to it.
Yeah.
The vendor room started having more of a horror hound vibe, which was not the Wasteland vibe.
I remember buying New York Ripper Vidmark. $5. Under a table of a dude that could care less.
Yeah.
About what I'm doing. I'm just pulling out random boxes and crates and I'm like, how much for this? He's like, everything in that box is $5. I'm like, okay. And then I got a bunch of sweet ninja movies from them, and I was like fucking left. I spent about $30 or $40, but I had like fucking 15 tapes. I'm like, fuck yeah. I think I got I Dismember Mama from them. It's like random shit, but.
Is that the dude you bought fucking Mutilator from that was like color purple?
No, not that guy. Not the guy with like the Dark Knight pant, the Joker pants.
Yeah.
Not that guy. He's like, that dude's an actual clown. He dresses like one, but like he's like, oh yeah, dude, all those tapes in there, man. Like, do you have a copy of and this is before Massacre Video released 555.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he was
I was like, oh, you got
I'm willing to trade.
Yeah, I pulled out the Clam.
Well, no, Massacre Video, that was the first release, was 555.
Okay, he was asking me if I had that.
Yeah. Even when Massacre Video released that was a kind of rare sought after fucking tape.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, he was trying to get one over you, thinking you didn't know what that fucking movie was.
Yeah, I pulled out the Warner Brother Clam of Town That Dreaded Sundown. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. He's like, well, it's 35. I'm like, I got 20. He's like, actually, I'll trade you. He's like, do you got 555?
Fucking asshole.
And I almost just like threw his tape like a frisbee across the whole vendor room, like, fuck off. Then I ended up actually buying Beyond the Door.
Oh, yeah, Beyond the Door. Yep.
Like the first Beyond the Door, and I'm like, oh, cool. He's like, $5. I take it home. I pop it in my VCR, dude, and it's the scene from Oprah peeing.
In the color purple.
And like, I'm like, what the fuck? And I fast forward, and I'm like, someone recorded the color purple over my fucking Beyond the Door. And I was like, I'll never. And I see that dude every once in a while, dude, with his like, you know, Mad Hatter hat on and his like green pants, and I'm like, nah, I'm not gonna mess with that guy. He's still making his rounds. So, and I still got that tape, by the way, that Beyond the Door / Color Purple.
Beyond the Color Purple, man.
No good, man.
You got to move past it.
Yeah.
And go beyond the comfort.
Yeah, that's in the rear view, man. That's in the rear view, man. Stop living in the past. The future looks bright. I got to wear shades, man. But
I'm living now.
Yeah, Timbuk 3. Fucking. But yeah, that's all I got for you, man. I'm sure we'll be back with another ep in no time, right?
I don't see why we wouldn't.
Yeah.
Kind of the thing we do. Hiatus should be done.
Yeah, yeah, we're good. We're back on track, guys. We'll be pumping out episodes fairly frequently, I believe. And if you guys have any suggestions or anything you'd like us to... shout out to... I don't know how to pronounce. Lowe's husband. He reached out and wanted us to, you know, he had a suggestion for a movie. If you guys have any, or just if you want to say what's up, or...
I feel like we've thrown this out there so many times and no one's ever responded.
A few people have, but it's, you know, scattered. But, you know, whatever. Maybe they party like us. They forget.
I'm going to hook up a phone line. We can get people to just call in.
Yep. 976, what the fuck's up? What you got for us? All right. Well, you got anything else, brother?
I don't think I really do. I think that's enough for today.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, guys, and we will see you on the flip side.
All right. See you guys
later.